Aloha and welcome to the Hawaii Family Forum Triple F Podcast. Triple F stands for Faith, Family, and Freedom. Hawaii Family Forum has worked alongside the faith-based community in Hawaii since 1998. Join us today as we continue to work toward a Hawaii where God is honored, religious freedom flourishes, families thrive, and life is cherished. Aloha, everybody. This is Eva Andrade. I'm the president of Hawaii Family Forum. And last week, we began our conversation about life issues here in Hawaii, specifically focusing on abortion. And I am sitting once again with Janet Grace Hochberg. And we left off. Welcome back, Janet.
Well, thank you for having me back.
So where we left off last week, we were just getting into the state of contraceptive availability to our youth here in Hawaii. And we talked about going just into some of the legislative background, because I think that, Janet, you have a lot of things that you want to say, because I think parents are unaware of the dangers of what contraception can actually do to their kids. So first thing, Janet, you had mentioned in the last podcast that abortion was legalized in the United States in 1973, but Hawaii was a little bit ahead of the eight ball. Correct?
Correct, unfortunately.
The governor at the time was Catholic. He was Governor Burns. And I was small kid time going to Our Lady of Good Counsel when a lot of the discussion was taking place. Now, I wasn't at Our Lady of Good Counsel when abortion was actually legal in Hawaii. But in the first couple of years after it was, my teachers there discussed it and discussed the process, because a lot of people thought that Governor Burns was going to veto the bill because he was Catholic. And so I'm just curious, Janet, you know, what are your thoughts about some of the early days when abortion, so Hawaii is ahead of the curve. It's 3 years before it becomes a national issue here in Hawaii, and abortions we know were already taking place in the late 60s.
Correct.
So take us back a little bit and walk us through that.
Yeah, so, you know, sadly, Hawaii is the first state in the nation to legalize elective abortion on demand, really for any and all reasons. And that includes, that doesn't give exception to the life of the mother, rape or incest. Or, I mean, that's inclusive, everything. So so what a lot of people don't realize also, Eve, is that abortion is legal up until all nine months of pregnancy. And I think that should really cause us to pause and to really, if we don't understand what that means, really, you know, really have a desire to want to really, especially if a woman has already given birth and had a baby, to really go, wow, that our civilized America allows abortion on demand up to all 9 months of pregnancy.
Now, we'll be fair, because I know that there's some listener out there who's going to say, oh, no, but after 20 weeks,
That's correct, but you have to understand
how that is defined.
Yeah, that's very broad language in the statute. And really, the life of a mother could be, I've got a cold. I don't want to. Okay, I'm exaggerating.
Well, mental health.
Mental health
is included in
is
that.
Included.
So she's stressed about the fact that she's having this baby. She's financially burdened. Her husband just left her. She was pregnant out of wedlock.
Exactly.
That sort of thing.
Right.
Could be classified in Hawaii law as health of the mother.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of times if maybe the mom is may have a, you know, a legitimate medical condition something traumatizing that comes up after, you know, the cutoff, gestational cutoff time. Here in Hawaii, the latest Planned Parenthood says that they'll do abortions is 15 weeks in 6 days. I called them yesterday to reclarify that. So, and here's the thing. This is the land of aloha. This is what I fell in love with 35 years ago. This is why I came here, because of the unique and special way that the culture here really values everyone, you know, and how we share that treasured gift, you know, of love and compassion and caring for one another and nurturing each other. And you know what? When your neighbor is in crisis, you go, if you're able, to that neighbor and that friend, and you help them. And here, to think that a Catholic governor would he didn't even veto the bill, obviously, but he didn't sign the bill. And what's really I find interesting at this that abortion was illegal here for 100 years prior. Did you know that?
You know, it's as you're talking, I was able to pull up some of the old records from when abortion was legalized here in Hawaii. And, you know, I'm just blown away that some of the very people who ushered this bill in were people of faith. I'm reading right now from a book called Roe versus Wade, The Untold Story of the Landmark Supreme Court Decision That Made Abortion Legal. And they have a quote in here that it really bothered me. And so for you Catholic listeners, I'm going to quote from the book now. It says, the Hawaii Roman Catholics had even contributed to the law's passage. Mm. The bill was ushered through the state Senate by a Catholic senator and further helped along by a nun who, although personally opposed to abortion, offered riveting testimony in favor of the repeal bill because she felt that abortion should remain a matter of individual choice. The only opposition to the bill came from the 30% of the island population that was Catholic, and several legislators publicly protested their heavy-handed tactics in trying to defeat the bill. Governor John Burns, a Catholic, attended Mass every morning, permitted the bill to become law, although he did not sign it. He issued a lengthy statement in which he expressed a view that echoed the thinking of many liberal Catholics at the time, explaining that he could, quote, never let his private political and religious convictions influence his judgment as a governor of all people, end quote. As a result, despite his personal misgivings, and considerable pressure, including many threats, he did not veto the law. That goes to the point that you just made. So please continue your thought on this. It's very fascinating stuff.
Yeah, this is really fascinating history. And what is really striking to me is that after, and this was known as Act One, so every legislative session, the slate is clean and they start with, you know, they number the bills. It's a Senate bill, SB, or it's a House bill, or it's a resolution. And this was the first act passed. Now the session opens in January. This flew it as early as March, you know, long before the May deadline or whenever the, you know, bills are last heard, you know, and sent to the you know, committees. So this gained a lot of momentum really fast and it just sailed through. So what I learned as well is that there was a concerned group of medical professionals that wanted to do some case study. And starting as early as March 13th through July 15th, 1970, that's March, April, May, June, July, 4 months, a group of professionals from University of Hawaii, okay, I will leave any other comments to off the table, but from the University of Hawaii Medical Center or whatever their departments were that dealt with doing data collection and things like that, did this study on different types of abortions, what islands they were coming from, were there any complications, how many women were seeking to obtain abortion. And what I found out was that in just that four-month period, six hospitals statewide performed 1,169 abortions in 4 months. 88% of abortions performed were on Oahu. The number of non-residents obtaining abortions is unknown. 2.9 of the induced abortions would have been legal under stringent interpretation adherence to the law proposed in the model penal code. If the clause on psychological or mental health of the woman is not included, only 1% would have been legally eligible to have an abortion. And the total number of live births. Now, I really want to tie this together. I want to bring this home. So the total number of live births through that study and reporting period from March 13th to July 15th, 1970, was 6,208 babies were born. 1,169 were legally killed in the womb. So there's right there, what is the percentage of our population that is, for mainly convenience in these reports, it's just too inconvenient to raise a baby. It's our modern, you know, Woodstock. Again, any, you know, love sex and rock and drug sex and rock and roll. You know, so it's just way too inconvenient for me. It's easier now that we've passed this law to, instead of take responsibility.
You know what it also did, and I think we had Glenn Stanton from Focus on the Family here, and one of the points he makes really drives that point home, Janet. He says that what we did is we taught society that men are unimportant, and it also gave them permission to not be responsible. What we did is we put a talking point in every male person's hand saying, it's not your choice, it's not your responsibility.
Right.
So a man can go in and impregnate 12 women,
yes,
and not have any responsibility for any of those children unless the woman decides that the man should be responsible.
You know, former First Lady Michelle Obama just recently gave a speech, and she talked about having strong men. And I think her quote was something like, that does it mean respect? Does it mean responsibility? Does it mean compassion in raising boys into men? And she felt that we might be protecting men a little too much to where they feel entitled and self-righteous. And I think she was asking if men should be taught a little bit more responsibility.
And she has no idea that all she did is solidify the point that the legalization of abortion removed men from the decision-making process and also gave them permission to not be responsible.
We enabled them. We enabled them to be creatures of, you know, sex, or to, you know, really tell them that it's okay. And you look at all this sexual harassment and that's coming out all over the news today, because you know what? Abortion and Planned Parenthood are really good ways to cover it up. You know, it's a quick fix. It's an easy solution to a very complex issue.
And it's a burden placed on the female that she's encouraged in, especially going back to talking about our young girls. They're encouraged, if their parents are not going to understand, to make this decision without them. So this is a heavy burden that we're placing on our young girls.
That exactly. And you know, here's the thing you got to remember. These are people of extreme influence and power. You know, the biggest world leaders, and Michelle Obama and President Obama at the time, you know, had no qualms about saying publicly, you know, if one of my daughters find themselves pregnant and don't want to keep the baby, basically our grandchild, you know, we'll support their abortion decision. But here it goes deeper than that for this mindset and ideology. President Obama was the only sitting senator in the Illinois Senate that voted three times against the Infant Born Alive Protection Act. This would have been a law that said if a baby survived a botched abortion, that you provide medical care to that child, that living, breathing, viable person outside of the womb. He said no, put it in a utility
closet
room and let it die. This is what we're dealing with.
And funny how those same arguments are being used, in a sense, with assisted suicide.
Right, exactly.
We will let our elderly kapuna, who are facing end-of-life decisions, to go into a back room, take a pill, and maybe possibly die alone. And we will have a podcast entirely dedicated to assisted suicide, because we've got yet so much to talk about. But I do want to say, with this law that was passed, Janet, as you know, at the time, what it did was it permitted abortion only by licensed physicians.
Correct.
Or surgeons, or licensed osteopathic physician or surgeons. And it required them to be performed in hospitals.
Yes.
And it required a woman seeking an abortion that she had to certify that she was domiciled here in the state of Hawaii. Now, let's fast forward to 2006. under Governor Lingle. I'm trying to move forward with legislatively because we want to get to the argument that we always made. If you look at faith-based arguments, they always talk about slippery slope, correct? Mm-hmm. Once you take that step, it opens the door. So a woman's right to choose, ultimately, we believe, will become her choice is going to supersede that of a doctor who doesn't want to do it. So we're going to get into that progression in a minute. But in 2006, Governor Lingle actually signed a bill. This was House Bill 1242. Mm-hmm. And what it did is it would prohibit the state from denying or interfering in a woman's right to choose or obtain an abortion.
Is that the residency requirement?
It took away the residency requirement. So now Hawaii opened its doors for anybody in the entire United States to come to Hawaii, this beautiful place of aloha.
Well, anywhere in the world, really. There's no residency requirement across the board.
So we could have somebody from Belgium or right. somebody from Germany.
Exactly. And I know it is. It's devastating all these years later. And, you know, and to that point, you know, I think what is really so heartbreaking about it all, so many things, just the message we're sending to our youth, to our teens, even younger than that, the intrinsic value that human life really is defined, you know, so loosely, that there really is no value here in Hawaii for the unborn child. But, you know, when you think about Queen Liliuokalani, there in 1967, I have the historical abortion statistics for Hawaii. In 1967, there were 12 abortions. In 68, there were 12. 1969, there were 75. In 1970, when we legalized it, it became the law of the land. There were 2,867 abortions. From 1971 to 1988, there were anywhere from 4,000 to 6,000 abortions in any given year. You think of all these lives that have been lost to, you know, systematic, you know, to abortion on demand. You can see I have these statistics in front of me. 1994, almost 6,000 abortions. 1995, almost 6,000. And the majority of these are on teenagers, you know, and women between 18 and 24 years old.
And I know you did a statistic for me. We were talking probably a couple months ago, and you said you kind of figured out what the estimated amount of babies aborted here in the state of Hawaii since legalization would be. Do you remember what that number was?
I'm putting it conservatively between 250 and 300,000. And here's the thing. What Planned Parenthood loves to do is they love to prey on minorities. They love to prey on people that can't afford good medical care, that can't go to a good gynecologist and have good real, you know, real options, you know, and alternatives, and be given real hope and spared from the fallout and the aftermath of abortions. Most teenagers have been exploited, have been forced to have sex. No 13, 14-year-old girl really wants to have sex with a 17, 18-year-old, 19, 20, 21-year-old. I don't believe that at all. And so Planned Parenthood sets these clinics up and more at-risk, you know, minority neighborhoods where the poverty level is at an all-time high. And that's why you see those clinics on the neighbor islands, you know, have shut down, thankfully, in some of those neighborhoods in Kapaa. And then on the Big Island, it's permanently closed because the traffic, you know, they couldn't target those minorities that they were looking for.
You know, that's a good point to make because the age of consent in Hawaii up until, I believe it was 2003, was actually 14.
Yes.
Hawaii Family Forum was one of the organizations that worked very hard to raise the age of consent to 16. So legally 14, 15, and 16-year-old girls were allowed to avail themselves to this. And so what we were finding back then, Janet, and I know that this is some of the statistics that you're fully aware of, is that a lot of these girls were dating men that were well older than them, than just a few years. Some of these girls were 15, 16 years old, and their boyfriends, quote unquote, were in their 30s or 40s. And basically what they were doing was, this was a way for them to get these girls involved into prostitution,
yes,
and sex trafficking.
Sex trafficking.
So let's understand that this is a bigger issue than just what we're talking about.
They're all gateways into real sex violence against, innocent girls. And, once they get indoctrinated, I know a few. I was involved in a case where I was asked to be a safe house for a woman that was coming out of the sex trafficking trade. Once they get their feet in there, it's life and death every day. Their life is hanging in the balance because their pimps could, one wrong move, one wrong look, one wrong call, it's all over for them. And it's not a life that I think any young girl goes looking for. Again, there are so many components to this. And yes, so it's all a gateway. It's a push. Planned Parenthood, I don't want to say that they're in the business of sex trafficking. That's not what I'm saying. However, you can go to a website called Child Predators. It's www.childpredators.com. And it's a sting that was set up through Life Dynamics. Are you familiar with Life Dynamics?
Absolutely.
Mark Critcher?
Mm-hmm.
And they did undercover stings at Planned Parenthood clinics with underage girls that were being pimped out and brought in for abortions by 20, 21, 22, sometimes older men.
Oh my goodness. And you bring up a really good point. And dear listeners, we'd either have to dedicate another podcast to this, but everyone is fully aware of what happened with the DeLayden situation with the undercover Planned Parenthood
Troy
stuff.
Newman,
so we are definitely not trying to say that everything is horrible and everything is bad, although we're totally opposed to abortion. But what we are saying is that there is a whole lot of evil that our keiki is being exposed to. And as parents, we really need to be aware of what's out there. So as our time starts ticking away again, what I do want to do is fast forward now to 2004, where the legislature brought up the first bill that would force emergency rooms here in the state of Hawaii to provide emergency contraceptives. Now, the reason that we had a problem with this is because St. Francis Hospital, a Catholic hospital who did operate an emergency room at the time, did not want to provide emergency contraceptives because it was against their religious tenets. And there were many years that went by between 2004 and 2013, where the legislature kept trying to force St. Francis to provide emergency contraceptives. And again, we weren't saying that women, although we don't like emergency contraception, we weren't saying that women should not be allowed to access this if they wanted to go to St. Kapi'olani, for instance, who specialized at the time and still does in the rape of young women. And we want to be very clear about that if a woman has experienced rape, we want them to get the best services possible. We want them to get whatever services they need. But St. Francis Hospital should, as a faith-based organization, be able to say, this is against our tenets, we do not want to provide it. And we fought that bill along with, at the time you were with Aloha Life Advocates, formerly known as Hawaii Right to Life, also fighting against this horrible legislation. And it ultimately passed in 2013 because St. Francis sold its land. Now, the reason I want to talk about that is because there are no protections in that law, is there, for, say, an emergency room doctor who is a Catholic or a practicing, a strong Christian who does not want to provide this?
No protections whatsoever. So no language in there saying that if, I believe that emergency contraceptive is an abortifacient. In fact, it's an abortion-causing pill. And what we need to understand is that we believe as children of God, that life begins at conception once the sperm and the egg meet, and that the 28 chromosomes from the mommy and daddy happen. That is a human life right there. It has intrinsic, inherent value. As Eva and I have right now, sitting looking at each other talking, that life in the womb at conception, that cytoblast, is equally valued as we are looking at each other right now. And what Planned Parent tries to do to obfuscate the issue is they say now what they're doing is teaching your children that conception starts at implantation. When the sperm and the egg are implanted into the uterus, okay? That is just a blatant lie. Every doctor, scientist, biologist will tell you that no. So what they're saying is basically that emergency contraceptive stops a unwanted pregnancy. Okay. At one point there were time limits on it. You had to have to take it after 2 days of having unprotected sex. In the case of rape or incest, you got to get in there. Now it's kind of like anything goes. There's a whole variety of them. You can see them all lined up on the shelf at CVS or Long's. There aren't any real instructions on take it 1 day or 2 days or 3 days. I mean, there are a little bit. But the main thing that you have to understand are the side effects on these pills. So not only does it compel us to go against our strongly held religious beliefs that we are constitutionally protected to have, it compels us to do something that we believe violates our faith in a very horrifying way. I don't want to be accomplice to the a possibility that if I give someone an emergency contraceptive pill because I'm forced to under government mandate, that could cause the death of an unborn child.
And that, dear listener, brings us to the end of our podcast number 2 on the issue of life in Hawaii. So as we end this podcast, I want you to stay tuned for till next week. And I'm going to have Janet talk about two things. We're going to talk about two things. First of all, we want to get into the nuts and bolts of what are the harm of these pills. I mean, why are we really so strongly opposed? Of course, as faith-based people, as Janet mentioned, it's the dignity of the human person, and we believe in life from the moment of conception. But we also want to take a step back and understand that women make this choice all the time, and we are a people of grace and forgiveness and mercy, and we want to talk about a God who will love you no matter what decisions you've made in your past. And he will wash you white as snow. So come back next week, and we will end this podcast on life in Hawaii. Thank you so much, Janet, for sharing your manawa today. And dear listener, we will see you back next week.
Thank you.
Aloha, this is Eva Andrade, president of Hawaii Family Forum, and we are pleased that you were able to join us on this weekly Triple F podcast. We hope you'll join us next week. Take care and God bless.